Hey, welcome to the CMO Whisper Show. I'm your host, Steve Olensky. Part marketing practitioner, part ad agency veteran, part journalist. I was a writer for Forbes for 10 years. I've had so many insightful conversations over the years with business leaders, to athletes, to celebrities, to, of course, CMOs. The only difference now is instead of sharing those insights through written form, I'm doing it this way. My guest this week is Umang Shah, Vice President of Marketing Enablement and Effectiveness for Northwestern Mutual. A graduate of the Rochester Institute of Technology, Umang has had stops at Xerox, Microsoft, Walmart, Unisys, among many others. He's an avid cyclist and CrossFitter. He's also a new dad. Congratulations, by the way. And welcome to the Parenting Club, and welcome to the CMO Whisperer Show.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve.
It is my pleasure, my friend, and I want to jump in. So much to cover, and I want to start with something that I think is really ironic. About 10 years ago, when I was at Forbes, well before you and I met, I wrote a piece for my Forbes column entitled, "The Nine-Letter Word Every Marketer Needs to Remember at All Times." The word was, and still is, relevance.
Love it.
I kid you not. Fast forward, for those not living with, those listening who are not aware, which I'm about to share, Umang has created this concept, right, which we're going to dive deeply into, called perpetual relevance. And when you and I met like a month ago at an event for brand innovators in Philly at the Rite Aid headquarters, you mentioned to me about this concept, and it didn't click. And then I went, wait a minute. Hold on. And I'm going through my Forbes archive. I'm like, oh my God. I literally wrote a piece all about the word relevance.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? And I so want to dive into, because like I said, it was relevant then, pun intended, and it's relevant now, and it always will be. The need to be relevant, right? So yeah. let's start with the concept that you created called perpetual relevance. What was the genesis behind that? And then let's get into the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah, I love that. And I didn't know that. So that's actually, that explains why when you and I met, there was an instant kinship.
Yep.
Like we were on the same page and we didn't even know it. So it was actually about that same time frame, about 10 years ago. You know, there are a lot of companies out there talking about acting like a startup, a lot of these cliches that are out there. And being that I was employed with a lot of larger brand names, I'd be invited to go out and speak. So I'd go out, talk about social media or data-driven marketing strategies. But I have to be honest with you, like I didn't feel like I was saying anything unique. And so for about a year, right around that 10-year mark, to about 10 years ago, I took a year off from any speaking gigs. I turned down any speaking gigs. And I really just wanted to come up with what I thought was most important for marketers. What value could I give back to marketers? And it was this concept of, look, it's easy to do something interesting in a moment, but it's really, really difficult without some discipline to actually build this machine where you're perpetually relevant. And so how do you as a marketer do that? How do you do that for organizations? And I built this talk track 10 years ago. At that point, it's funny, I used Dwayne Johnson as a model, and I did a case study on BlackBerry, you know, this organization that went from really, really strong relevance to irrelevance in an extremely short amount of time, like a matter of less than 5 years. So, you know, there are certain aspects that I've learned throughout my career that if you are willing to make some hard decisions, if you are clever about how you solve problems, if you're willing to put your money where your mouth is and kind of redefine success and failure, you know, there are things that I've experienced, good and bad, that have taught me, hey, you know, there are ways for large organizations to stay relevant, like those small guys that are coming up and, you know, nipping at the heels of the big guy. And everyone wants to act like the small guy, but I don't think that's the goal. I think, how do you create an environment and a culture where relevance is at the core, and all of your marketers, all of your employees all have that same mission?
Yeah, the word can take on And I, to me, does take on different meanings and connotations depending on the audience, right, or the group that you're referring to. Meaning, for marketers, to me, perpetual relevance is constantly staying apprised of latest technologies, for one example, right?
Yes.
And knowing, you know, what's still, quote, relevant and what's not. And but always having that one eye on the future to see what's around the corner. And then when it comes to what marketers need to do externally is stay relevant in the minds of your consumers and buyers, right?
100%.
And be in that moment. And I remember seeing a study, and it was probably around the time I wrote that Forbes piece where the number, and it's probably still very, here's the word again, very relevant today, is consumers hate mistargeted communications.
Right.
And that to me, that subliminal was mistargeted is it's not contextually relevant to me. So let's break down, you know, you talked about it up here, the genesis of it, of your concept, which is great. But let's start internally with marketers, regardless of size. And I love that you put it that way. This is not unique to a Fortune 500 company or the opposite end of it. It's everybody. But in the world of digital, which we know, which is new now, is old in 30 seconds. And then with AI changing everything, how do marketers, or what obligation or responsibilities do marketers have internally now to stay perpetually relevant?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. There's a lot of aspects of that we can talk about. Look, I think just given the industry of marketing, right? Regardless of what industry you operate in, if you think about marketing, it's rapidly changing, to your point. There's always new technologies that are coming in to disrupt. And it's funny because I have a background in technology, but I don't really like to think of myself as a technologist. I use that technology background and my interest in technology to help me be a better marketer. And 9 times out of 10, what that means is using technology to better understand your audience, right? And so that's from the very beginning to understand what they value, using data, using, you know, doing some tests to see what gets traction, what doesn't get traction, to understand where else your audience may be active and interested, and use all of that information to really build a deep understanding of your audience and what they value,
mm-hmm.
right? If you only use AI and all of these great tools for that, I think you're winning just by using it to better understand your audience. Then obviously, as you get into the practice of activating campaigns, you know, these technologies and tools can help us basically become superhuman, right? There's a lot of concern around these technologies replacing people, especially in the marketing space, right? We're in this creative world where some of our assets are coming up with content and activating campaigns. How do you leverage that technology and understand the latest and greatest technologies to be able to create a better, more relevant, personalized experience for your audience that is able to communicate the value that they need? And honestly, I think about the technology landscape and what powers marketers today, even from 5 years ago, it's drastically different, and it will continue to evolve at that rate. So it's incumbent on marketers to understand what's out there, what's possible, and use it in a really responsible way, right? And I want to say responsible because I tend to, you look at some marketing and it's less marketing than it is annoying, right? Hey, you want to watch this video? Well, I'm going to get in the way of you watching the thing you want to watch, right? To me, that's not marketing. That's not good marketing. And so how can you responsibly use these tools to actually create value and have your audience not feel like it's an interruption, but instead it's something that benefits them?
You just took the word out of my mouth. It's, and I certainly don't want to coin this phrase. So don't run with this because it wouldn't be a good thing, but it's interruption marketing.
Well, it's an oxymoron.
Exactly.
In my opinion, because I have this romantic view of marketing, right? Marketing at its core has the ability to tell a really compelling story to people and get them, you know, motivated and compelled to take action, we've lost our way as marketers, right? We've taken the lazy way out. Let's just buy a bunch of Facebook ads and just manage the efficiency of those ads. I don't care if I annoy 100 people, if I get one person. That's not good marketing. That's lazy marketing.
Exactly. I could not agree more. When I hear things like that, I think of the old adage of just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do it. You know, like,
yeah,
because I can buy X amount of Facebook ads and blast it out to the whole world doesn't mean I should.
And there's a responsible way to use those ads, right? There's so much information with that Facebook has. And yeah, it takes a little bit more time to be sophisticated with those tools, but it's worth the investment of energy and effort.
1,000%. And I'm also go back to, I don't think marketers give consumers and buyers enough credit. And what I mean by that is, and it's in the context of what we're talking about, consumers and buyers, especially today in 2024, and especially maybe a younger generation, not to knock us older guys, but they know we have information on them. And when we send them something that is contextually irrelevant, there's no excuse for that, right? You buy a pair of sneakers, you get an ad for the same sneakers. No, right? And I don't think marketers give consumers / buyers enough credit. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I'm going to tell you a story. So this actually takes me back over about 20 years ago. I was just starting out my career. I'd been in sales at Xerox and then got promoted into a customer marketing role. I was asked to speak to the incoming class of interns and new hires. These are all, like, I was relatively young at that point, and they were even younger than I was. And I went up on stage and I started to talk to people about the value of data. This was 20 years ago. And I started to explain to that audience how we as marketers use data and how they as consumers should be conscious, aware of that data usage and make smart choices. And at that point, the jaws in the audience dropped. Because people weren't aware that marketers were using data in the way we were using it. Everyone was freaked out. They thought it was creepy. Fast forward to today, nobody has any sort of, you know, misconception that, oh, their data is totally private and nobody knows anything about us. No. Now what they know is my data has value. Right. And what their expectations are now is that as a marketer, if you know about me, they're going to expect more from you. Right. They're going to expect that you're going to use that data to actually try to understand them, to try to give them information that's personalized or relevant to them. Right. I get these emails and it's funny. I got an email yesterday that, and it is a company that I haven't purchased from, but I've maybe expressed interest in, maybe I signed up. They sent me a thing and they said, hi, Rachel. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm definitely not Rachel. It totally turned me off. And I know in the background, some data element was crossed and, like, you know, it's just like a simple spreadsheet error, maybe whatever. But at the same time, the fact that that thought in, like, and intention wasn't there, like, okay, you've lost me, right? You had an opportunity to create a personalized experience and you kind of messed it up. So now consumers are actually way more sophisticated. They understand the value exchange and they have much higher demands of marketers to not be lazy.
That's exactly right. There's really no excuse.
Exactly.
That's what it comes down to. One of the really interesting things we talked about as we were preparing for this was your personal passions and how they drive your work. And it's a really interesting topic that I haven't really delved into with many people, but I'm really interested to dive into this with you about you're kind of crossing streams, if you will, right? But I think it's so, what is that word again? Relevant for everyone, how your personal passions overlap and intersect and drive your work. And I think some people, I don't know, take for granted or lose sight of that? Or I really want to get into this with you about how your personal passions drive your work, but then at a more agnostic level, how we all, you know, are affected by our personal passions.
Yeah, I love this topic. And as I've gotten older and I have more and more experience, you start to really understand how that plays out, right? When I was younger, I often thought about the separation of your personal life and your work life. And while that's true, the common denominator is you. And so as you're going through experiences in your personal life, how they impact your professional life, honestly, it took me a long time to actually recognize the impact it was having. I'll use something probably more recent, right? You mentioned I'm a new dad. I'm a relatively new dad. I still consider her a baby, but she's 3 and a half. She was a pandemic baby. But I didn't start my, let's just call it settling down, until I was 40 years old. I got married, had a baby, all after 40. And I think about the impact that that's had even on my leadership style, right? On the ways that I interact with people, how I value work and the balance of your personal time, how I'm able to support my team in a very different way. It's in large part because of the experiences I'm having at home. I know the way I was when I was younger, and it was very results driven, really, you know, kind of at all cost, you know, achieve success. And in those moments, yeah, those successes were real and they were great. But now as I've matured and I've learned how to do it in a way where, you know, it's more holistic, right? It's not just the success of putting a number on a board, but it's about a team success. It's about helping people grow. So that's one example that I think about a lot, and just how it's given me a new perspective on life. And that's a common thing, right? I'm not the first dad out there, right? So everybody talks about how that has an impact. I even think about some of the things that I do that are outside of having a family. And one of the things that I mentioned to you, I'm really into, or like, I'm really passionate about beverages, right? Like, you can call it whatever you want. Any, you name beverage, I can probably give you an interesting story about it. I'm really thoughtful about my morning coffee routine. Why is that, right? I want to understand each of the elements, the process. I take the time to make a nice cup of coffee. I've fine-tuned it. I know the grind. I know the roast level. I know the processing of the beans. I've spent time and energy doing that. But it's that same level of interest that if we as marketers are able to apply to our work, to really deeply understand and be thoughtful about what, you know, the experiences that we're creating. For me, having this cup of coffee right now is an experience, sharing it with you over a conversation. And in the same way, we create experiences for our audiences every day. And are we as thoughtful about those experiences, or, you know, are we rushed? Do we have deadlines? And, you know, we want to just like get it on the board and figure it out as afterwards. Or do you actually spend the time? I'll say this one last thing. When I'm asked to really break down marketing in its most like simple form, right? I talk to people about, if you want to be successful, all you have to do is think about where people came from and where you want them, what you want them to leave that experience with. Right? Everything else is answered. And if you break down a modern marketing campaign right now, you'll have multiple channels, you'll have different activation timelines, you'll have paid, owned, earned activities. How do you think holistically about, okay, they went from here and then they went here? Is this experience in between actually going to drive that action or that response that we're looking for? And really break down that entire experience and make sure it's compelling and make sure it provides value. It's hard work. It's monotonous, tedious work, but it pays off, right? It pays off in that experience that the user has.
Exactly. You mentioned marketers, and I want to ask you this question, and I'm sort of putting you on the spot, but give me three attributes the best marketers have.
So I have two, and they both start with a C. So I'll see if I can come up with a third one that starts with a C as well. Look, you know, us marketers, we love to have everything in threes.
Well, and we love lists too. So go ahead.
Alliteration, yeah, all of it. So look, I think the number one thing is to be curious. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, the number one thing. Like a lot of people say this, right? And this goes back to a lot of people say this, but how do you create an environment where you actually not just enable curiosity, you foster curiosity, but you really encourage it and embrace it, right? I think it's so important for people to just say, hey, what if we did things differently? Or why do we do this, right? And really dig into that, not just as a cursory question. And I'll tell you, this first one, the reason that it's so close to me is, you mentioned all the different companies I've worked at. I tend to join an organization. I'm challenged with either building something new or rebuilding, launching some, you know, marketing division, typically a modern marketing group. And the very first thing I do is I come in and I just ask the question, what's going on? And then I ask why, right? It's why is just another, it's another form of curiosity. And when you get people to think about, well, why do we do this? Is it the best way? What if we tried something different, right? And you start to throw those seeds out. They get embedded in people's minds. They're like, yeah, you know what? I don't know why we do this. Yeah, maybe we should try that. What would it hurt? And if you enable that team to fail, mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, what's the downside? Let's just go try it. That sounds great, right? And you really, really nurture that curiosity. I think that's one of the most valuable things. The second one, you know, I do think it's about being clever. I used to pride myself on how smart I was. You know, with that technology background, I'm an Asian, so, you know, you have tiger parents. And that was my source of pride. I can solve any technical problem. You give me a problem, I know the answer. I'm the smartest guy in the room. What I quickly realized that does not serve you in the long run. And it's the exact opposite. To be successful long-term, especially if you want real upward mobility, you want to be the dumbest guy in the room and be really comfortable with that. Embrace that idea that you know less than everyone else, but you know how to put it together, right? You know how to align, and you know how to build a vision and get everybody to move towards it. But I think this concept of clever is... It's so much more than just being smart, because you can say, well, I know that if we do these things, we're going to get this many leads. Yeah, that's smart. Fine. You know the answer. But the clever piece is, how do you do it creatively and do it in a way where, you know, most situations in our day-to-day marketing lives are not that cut and dry. They're not just as simple as here's your funnel, put a bunch of money up top and you'll get all this money on the bottom end. You usually have constraints. You're usually saying, oh, shoot, we have to run these five campaigns at the same time. How do we do that? Or, oh, no, we had to do a budget cut, so now I have a lot less for this channel. How do I create this content? How do I leverage this tool or capability? You have to be able to problem solve and do it in a really interesting way. Like the bar is still high. Remember, all our audiences are expecting a lot from us. So how do you do all of those things, create these compelling experiences, do it with all the challenges that get thrown at you, and still create this amazing experience?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think to me, clever is better than smarter every day of the week.
So curiosity and clever, those are your two C's. Yeah. Think about a third. Maybe you'll get back to me.
Yeah, I don't have a C, but look, I just think being comfortable, hey, there's my C, being comfortable with the fact that nothing will stay the same, right? This is a concept, like a lot of people will, you know, they like routine, it's comfortable to be in a place that you know and you're familiar with. I can tell you right now, marketing will never be that. And if that concept is challenging for you, like there are plenty of other places. I won't say that, you know, will never have change. They'll just have less change than marketing will. Marketing is, like, you think about AI and the disruption that's caused, it will continue to be disrupted, and it's going to require people to be clever, right? It's going to require them to solve problems differently. It's going to force them to be curious about how to do that and just comfortable with the idea that, hey, we don't know what's around the next bend, but we know that we're going to be able to figure it out. And if you take those first two elements, it prepares you for the third. But I don't think people fully grasp that. Just let's just let go of the idea that, oh, this change is behind us. There will never be, there's always an endless, you know, line of change ahead of us. So let's just get comfortable with it. Let's keep on flexing those muscles of being curious and figuring out how to solve these problems.
Yeah, I would add one little caveat to the comfortable one, saying be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Right, right. So you said it much better than I did.
No, as you were saying, I'm thinking that's what I'm thinking. Like, you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable, being pushed, being out of your comfort zone, right? And the curious one is so spot on because it ties in, fits like the proverbial glove with perpetual relevance. Because you cannot have one without the other. To stay relevant, you need to be curious, you know, vigilant in your curiosity. There's no checking the box, as I like to say.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And look, you can't, like, there are marketers, and what we're talking about right now is how to be extraordinary, right? We're not talking about how to just punch the clock and get a paycheck, because there are lots of places that you can just be mediocre. But in order to really excel and be fulfilled in the work you're doing, see all of the upward mobility and the success that you want, this is the way. It's the harder way. You see it every day in the marketing that you interact with. There's some easy ways to be a marketer. And then there are difficult ways, but they're the right ways.
And a synonym for easy, as you said it earlier, is lazy.
I know. I was trying to be nice. But yes, you are 100% right.
Listen, one thing I really want to talk about, and it goes, and when I read this in the show notes as we discussed this, is the very first episode I did of my show, my guest was my good friend Doug Zarkin, who's the chief brand officer at Goodfeet, and he used to be at Pearl Vision Luxottica. And one of the stories that he told, and he was really proud of it, was a successful failure.
Yeah.
And I know you talk about, and you use a different word, you say celebrating failure. So the oxymoron that is, but let's dive into that. Why is that important to, quote, celebrate a failure?
Yeah, look, we've all heard the tried and true sayings. All these startups talk about fail fast, right, and adapt. All of that is true. The way that I actually put that into practice, in my job, most of my roles involve some form of innovation, marketing innovation. To your point, how do we look at what's coming next? How do we test it, learn about it, and then implement it in a way that makes sense for the company and the user, right? So we're always looking ahead. We're always trying, testing new things. But it wasn't enough for me to just have an innovation lab where we were successful based on how many technologies we implemented or how many new innovations we were able to push out. In each of my innovation labs, I've actually mandated a failure rate. So it goes even beyond celebrating it, right? Because when we would fail, we would celebrate it. But this went to the point of mandating that 20% of the tests, pilots that we ran had to fail. Like if we had greens all across the board, that's a red, right? So to me, the culture that it created was this environment where people were forced to push hard. Let's really push. If this is an innovation lab, let's try the coolest, newest, craziest idea, and let's push. But then I gave them the cover. Look, when, if and when it doesn't work out, that's totally fine, right? And so when whenever I would go out and give this talk on perpetual relevance, I use the example of Google Glass. Right. Back in the day, you saw, you know, all these mostly Google execs wearing these funky looking glasses, and it never caught on in that form. And one day they announced that they were going to be shutting down the project. It was a very public thing they announced. And if you read the press around that time, everyone was like, oh, this is a colossal failure. They spent all this money, time, and energy. And, oh, like, you know, it's a big black eye to Google for you know, having to shut down this thing. They couldn't get it off the ground. I was actually at Google's offices the next day after that announcement. We were doing a workshop where we were working with some of their creative teams. And I just asked them about us. And they were, you know, ear-to-ear grins. They're like, no, that was such an amazing project. I couldn't, you know, there was somebody there that was actually a part of that team. Like, it was such an amazing experience to be a part of that team, build something. And yeah, sure, we're not going to go to market with the actual device. But do you have any idea how many other Google products are being powered by that technology? Right. I mean, they had spun off Cardboard. They were doing, you know, what they were doing with augmented reality within Google Maps. They're like, this is like such an amazing story, and people get caught up with, oh, the actual device failed, right? It didn't go to market, didn't gain adoption. But who cares if you get all of this other value and you're able to make all of your other products significantly better with that investment? You've learned a ton. You found creative uses of that technology. That's not a failure. Like, no one at Google viewed that as a failure. And I try, you know, in smaller scales, I try to create that kind of environment in all of my teams.
It's a great example. And I know, I'm sure I didn't know that. I didn't know that backstory of Google Glass, how they look at it internally.
100%.
So it's fascinating. Let me pivot to your career. Has any one person had the biggest impact on it?
I'll tell you, you know, I had a CMO during my time at Campbell's. And still to this day, I speak to her multiple times a week, right? We've become friends, like we've had our families get together. So it's one of those relationships that, yes, it was professional, it started out professional, but I still remember the very first time I spoke with her and we just clicked, right? You could just tell there was this vibe, this energy where you get each other and you're both have the same ambitions. And you want big things, you want to drive change. And it was just a really good fit. And it was through that partnership that I won myself. She talks about it as well. The teams that supported us, all we had the opportunity to do some of the best work of our careers because of the environment that she created, right? She created that safe place where, hey, let's go and try things. Right. She would reach out to me when we had some excess budget. She would say, hey, what would you do if we could do? I still remember. So I'll tell you the one story. We all still talk about it. And there's so many great lessons that we learned through this process on strong leadership, on ways to be agile and nimble and creative and all of those things. One day I got a call from her name is Yin. She reached out to me and she said, hey, Umang, what if, you know, I'll leave dollars out of it, but hey, you know, we save some money in media. What would you do if we pass that money over to you? And, you know, we've been talking about this chunky brand. What would you do? And so, yeah, I said, hey, give me 45 minutes. And I scrambled my team. We had agency people, we had people on my team, and we did a quick brainstorm session. Said, you know, Chunky is this iconic brand. They had this campaign called Mama's Boy, where, you know, the mom's role in the athlete's life. But as you look at that campaign over the years, it's kind of lost its way for a period of time. It just kind of went off that original path. And so we started to think, how could we bring it back to that core essence? So we came up with this concept, and we truly built it as, let's just create an amazing piece of content that tells that story of the mom's role in the athlete's life. And it started out from when the first time the kid ever put on a helmet, like Pee Wee, all the way up through high school, college, and then ultimately professional. And the mom was there at every point, failures, you know, successes, celebrations. And it was this really moving, emotional piece of content. And our only intention at that point was to put that on YouTube and drive a bunch of awareness to that piece of content. What ended up happening is that people were so, like, they were so moved, and kind of the reaction to that piece of content was so amazing. People were like, I can't believe Campbell's just made me cry. Like, you know, I'm going to go out and buy some chunky soup right now. Like, all of these, I'm going to go call my mom, right? Hmm. All these amazing messages. And it really got a lot of traction. And so what ended up happening is that the video did so well that the media team decided to actually buy media placement for the Super Bowl. And we ended up using that spot for the Super Bowl. It was never intended as a Super Bowl spot. It was intended as a kind of reinvigoration of that brand campaign. And it, the content was good. It got the traction that we wanted it to get. And then we threw paid media on top of it to amplify that traction. Think about what I just said. If you look at most marketing campaigns nowadays, they are the exact opposite. I have a media budget. Okay, great. With that media budget, it's going to go out in these channels. All right, great. The very last thing they think about is, oh, we're going to need some content for that. Right? And so, you know, all that said, Yin was able to see that potential before we were anywhere near that. And she gave the team the space and the direction to aim big, to do something different. And it's still one of the, you know, the one of the peak campaigns that I think we all look back on and say we're the proudest of. It had such a big impact and it was so successful. I think it was like a top 10 video for that year. It was amazing.
That's an amazing story and a great testament to her and her impact on you.
She's a great leader that I look up to, a great friend. And ultimately, you know, we started off this conversation about how, you know, the aspects of your personal life come into your professional life. And to me, in an ideal world, like, you create these relationships because you're working on, you know, important things or difficult things, and you can create these relationships with people that live on beyond a job. Right. That's really way more important than anything else we're doing. And that's a great example of just that.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So I'm looking at time on we're going to wrap it up soon, but I have to end, as I do with everyone. And if you've listened to any of my shows, you know how I end it. And it's on a musical theme, and it's regarding the now famous album wall behind me, which I know no one can see, but it's there, believe me. And I'm a huge music fan. Music has played a big role in my life. Certain songs have more meaning than others. And the most impact or influential song I've ever heard in my life is called Lean On Me. It's an old song from the 70s. But is there a song, is there a lyric that resonates more than others to you? If you hear it, it just has a certain meaning.
Oh, this is such a perfect ending. I actually didn't anticipate this, but I get asked this question a lot around, hey, you know, what's good advice that you've heard, or, you know, a lot of topics like that. I always quote Pitbull. Yes, Mr. Worldwide. I quote Pitbull, and there's this one lyric that I think personally, professionally has carried through with me. And so the lyric goes, ask for money, get advice. Ask for advice, get money twice. And, you know, just as we're going through life, especially with my mentees, you know, a lot of, you know, they want to know, oh, how did you transition from this career to this career? Or how did you, you know, do these things? What do you think is, you know, the definition of success? And I think that lyric embodies it for me more than anything, because it applies to us personally. Look, if we're trying to grow, go out there and learn, ask for advice, get opinions, you know, really be curious and get information before asking for a favor, right? And if you focus on that, you're going to get a lot more value. But then when you think about it professionally, it's the same thing, right? Yeah, advice is, it's great because it rhymed, but it's more about its value, right? Like, how do you create that value as opposed to trying to close the sale? And the more you can focus on that value, the greater impact you're going to have. So I absolutely love that. And I love that it's from Pitbull, because nobody ever expects it from Pitbull. They expect some big philosopher or whatever. So I love the question, and thank you for letting me share that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, my friend, this has been such a pleasure. Your passion just comes out of you. And I love that in anybody, in your energy. And I was fascinated. I know my listeners are going to learn so much, professional, personal. So I just want to say thank you.
And happy to continue digging into it anytime.
Awesome. Thank you again, my friend. Well, that wraps up another episode of the CMO Whisperer Show. I hope you shared this episode with your friends. And if you have not already, please subscribe to be kept up to date on all the latest episodes. And if you're so inclined, leave me a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you.